Hello and welcome to the first in the ECM podcast series. I'm David Kitchener, the Managing Director of All Things Media Limited, the company that brings you ECN, Electrical Contracting News, electricalcontractingnews.com, and the new ECN Awards, which proved to be a great success last year and are scheduled this year for December the 5th. This podcast series will be covering all things electrical contracting. We will be interviewing contractors, suppliers, manufacturers, and associations, all designed to help the electrical contractor do their job better. So to kick off this first series of podcasts, we're talking to Emerson Patton, the founder of Bright Business Advice and the author of the book Bright Business Transformation. For those of you who don't know Emerson, and I'm sure most of you do, he has spent the last 15 years, bless him, helping business owners build stronger, more profitable businesses through his seven-sector orbit framework, which covers everything from sales and marketing, leadership, time management, and much, much more. Welcome, Emerson.
Thank you very much for having me, David. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's an interesting one. It's a subject that's dear to my heart. But firstly, Emerson, I must say the business of business, the business of running a business is dear to my heart. I run businesses, as you know. So tell us what your background is, Emerson, to this point.
So I started life as an apprentice, did electrical, electronics and computers, 4-year traditional apprenticeship. We did the ONC and the HNC. And I went through that whole engineering process around different parts of the business. So at the time I got to see how it works, and I was part of an old Plessy Group big company. So you got to literally spend
Plessy,
time.
There's a blast from the past.
Exactly. Yeah. It was a long time ago, as I said. And this was probably in the early 90s. And I went through and ended up working in technical support for them, because I found that I was quite good at dealing with people rather than being locked in a dark room figuring out deep problems with circuit diagrams and an oscilloscope. I ended up working in the technical support side, and also quite quickly some of the guys in the sales support side recognized I was quite good with the customers, and so they got me involved in the sales process as well. And that's all very well and good for them, because they were earning commission out of it. What I realized is I fancied having some of that myself. So I left there, moved into a company doing sales support in IT. So I moved across into the IT business. Still, obviously, you have to have a technical understanding of what's going on, but I'm then moving further away from the tools, so to speak, and then left that company and moved into the telecoms industry, where I spent another 7 or 8 years in the telecoms industry, working my way up through the sales and marketing side of that business. And was pleased to say, as I arrived at the end of my time there, I was one of their top account managers. I think I was winning the leaderboard at the time. There was about 30 of them in the group that I was in. And we were doing about $500 million turnover for Kingston Communications, the wow. business was. And I was one of their guys working there. And luckily for me, though, I'd had a mentor all the way up through that business. Yeah. So a guy called John Bailey, he's still a good friend of mine even to this day. And he was really into audiobooks, and well, back then there were tapes and CDs and books, and we went on courses together. And I was doing lots of work around personal development. And an interesting thing happened. The more I got into learning and educating myself, the more successful I became in my corporate career. So I was working my way up through the corporate career, and ended up at this final place where I think we were in an appraisal at the end. He goes, "So Emerson, you're 186% of target, 6 months into the year. What do you want to do?" And I was like, "Do you know what? I've got all this knowledge that I've built up, John, but I don't know what to do with it. I want to do something with it." And he said something to me then. He used to love coining this phrase, which was, "Take the risk of being brilliant." And he said, "Why don't you go out there and see what there is?" So I was out networking with a different view, I guess. And I ended up at an event where I met a guy, and he was looking for coaches. And I didn't know what coaching was. So he saw me speak at this networking event, and he asked me if I'd ever thought about it. And I was like, "Well, I don't know what the hell's one of them." And this was quite a long while ago. It was about 18 years now, in fact. And So we danced around for 3 months and decided, actually, this is something I do want to do. So I gave up my corporate career, much to the worry of my father. Although, to be fair, he did support me. So I then bought into a large global coaching franchise, which I then did.
Right.
I did that for 10 years then. But that's quite interesting because actually you have to buy yourself a job. You're buying yourself a business.
It's a franchising business,
yeah,
isn't it?
So I was in a franchise. So I owned my own business, but operated within a franchise and did that for 10 years. And that's, some would say, it's quite a significant time. While I was there, it was like another apprenticeship again. I feel like I had sort of three apprenticeships in my life. The first one was working in the engineering industry. The second one was working in the sales industry. And the third one is being a coach.
The thing about being a franchisee, it's the franchise, you're kind of dependent on the franchisor, isn't it? The company that owns the franchise, from in terms of marketing you and putting you out there. Did that all work for you?
Yes, but only in the way that I had to find all my own business. It wasn't really that they were finding it. I had to develop all my own leads. You had a brand, you had training, you had information, and I learned a lot from the tools and the people, really. So the first 5 years I was kind of learning my trade. I partnered with a few people. One of the areas that I was a bit weaker in was finance, because when you come from a sales and marketing background, hadn't had to work on finance so much. So I had a good friend of mine there, George Hanides. He was the ex-financial director for Pirelli for 18 years. So he became a close partner of mine, and we worked on a number of events together, working together, picking up clients and doing joint webinars and workshops and all sorts of stuff.
You sound like you've been blessed with all these professional people that have taken you under their wing.
I think if you put yourself out there and if you look for people, there are mentors out there, people who are further down the journey and want to feel like they're giving back to somebody else on their journey. I know certainly John said he saw with a twinkle in his eye something in him, in me, and he wanted to help support me on this journey. And certainly, you know, when it was George and I getting together, he was great at that bit. But what he didn't know was sales and marketing. And I was pretty good at that. I'd gone and got my Chartered Institute of Marketing qualifications as well. And with the background in corporate selling, I'd had more sales training courses than I knew what to do with, and, you know, had developed, in fact, my own sales training course. That was probably the first step where I actually ran a course for the company and, you know, actually really enjoyed running courses for people. That's what made me realize I needed to leap out into this world where we're educating and developing people.
So it's a great story. So where did Bright Business Advice come in?
So I was 10 years into the corporate coaching business, and I had to decide whether to renew my franchise or start my own thing. And it's funny how life happens. I think if you're looking for it, I signed a client up right at the end. And, you know, the guy said to me, you know, I said, are you interested in me or are you interested in the corporate coaching business? And he went, well, it's you that I want. I said, well, look, I'm thinking of starting my own thing, but I haven't got a company name. I haven't got a location. I haven't got any contracts. I haven't got anything signed up yet. And he said, well, if you want to, you could come and work out of my office. And his office was in Cambridgeshire, which was brilliant because I was on a non-compete for Bedford, Milton Keynes, Northampton. So I went to work from his offices, and his office was called Bright Advice, and he did financial advice. So his name's Andrew Perriman. Really thankful to the guy for taking me again under his wing. And he said, look, why don't you come and help support my business here? Now, obviously, he paid for his coaching, but he paid for that I managed to get him on a government agreement. So he managed to get a year up front, and he managed to get some of the money back against the government agreement, which was great for him, good for my cash flow. And what was even better for him, I was on site. So it was like having an on-site coach. There were many a time to say, can you come into the office a minute? I just like to have a chat to you. And I was like, sure, no problem. You know, I did lots of training and workshops for his guys as well. And we took that business, and I think we stuck another £500,000 turnover on that business in a year, and another 25% increase in his profitability as well.
And Bright Business Advice now is yours.
That's right. So I worked with him, and we came up with calling it Bright Business Advice at the time. So I was a totally separate business, just happened to operate from his location. But the name, I love the name Bright. It stuck really nicely. And after probably about a year, 18 months, I said to him, you know, are we going to do this as a joint venture then? Or are we going to, what are we going to do? And he said, well, look, I already own an insurance company and a legal entity. And he was involved in a number of property developments and all sorts of things. And he couldn't commit to the time I would require for being involved in my business. So I decided to take it back home and off I went and rebranded. But, you know, we had a great relationship, so I kept the name Bright. And I love the idea of what we're doing is we're, you know, we're bright, we're shining a light on people, helping them see the way forward, giving them a brighter future. And that's,
well, you're
that's
a bright,
what we're
you're
all
a
about.
Bright, you're a bright spark, Emerson.
Exactly. We like to help those bright sparks out there as well.
And that was bad, actually, wasn't it? But what year was this? What year did that actually take?
So in 2015, I set up Bright.
Okay.
So originally, obviously, when you're in a franchise, you run a business. So my business was running from 2005. It's still the same underlying business, but I changed from trading as the corporate business into trading as Bright Business Advice. I learned a heck of a lot with them and some really good guys. But in that journey, the first 5 years was a lot of learning. The second 5 years, though, I kind of nailed it while I was at the corporate. I managed to win best client results 3 years on the trot, near enough. I think there was a year in between, but I managed to win that. One of my clients won overall business of the year in their own awards that they did. Obviously, I was at your awards the other day, and that was brilliant to see. And I really encourage people to get involved in awards. I think it's great to celebrate success and to show what you can do. And so I always quite engaged in that stuff and found it helped me winning the awards as well, to show that, you know, if you have a choice of working with somebody who's just doing the business or somebody who's an award-winning person recognized by the industry, you know, and I continue doing that today. So in 2015, I set up Bright. I actually have also joined the Business Coach Academy as something that I'm part of for my continuous education and development. And I'm pleased to say, I think 2 years on the trot, I've won the Business Coaching Firm of the Year. So rather than it just being an individual, because we are now multiple coaches, I've won their coaching, you know, to having more than just one coach in the business. So
I have to say, Emerson, I'm a Tottenham supporter, but your trophy cabinet is probably bigger than the trophy cabinet at Spurs.
That'll make my dad sad as well, because he supports them too.
Does he?
Yeah, he has himself a ticket, and yeah, my brother go regularly. But I understand. But I'm pleased with the glassware that we've managed to build up along the way. You know, we've also done things like the SME Awards, where in 2021, I think I was in the finals for Entrepreneur of the Year and Business of the Year under 50 employees. We also enter ourselves into those awards as well, because I think it really does put you in a good position. In your ECN awards the other day, I had two in there. We had ProWired, who are in for under 5 million turnover. They're an old client of mine, and they're brilliant, doing really well there. Danny Edmonds and his team, and also Nathan Fribrance. And then also you had a PowerCore in there as well. And those guys I've worked with as well, you know, Chris and
brilliant.
Richard, and
brilliant.
I think they won over 5 million turnover business. So
they're all good accolades, aren't they? All good accolades, and it's amazing what, you know, where you are now. And obviously, I know your business, your business coach. You talk about, and I've read the book, by the way.
Thank you very much. I'm glad.
You talk about leadership, management, finance, operations, HR, marketing, sales. I just hope we've got enough time in this podcast to cover them all. So in the order I've just mentioned, let's kick off with your thoughts on leadership. An interesting one here, which I would also link with management to a certain extent. But there again, I suppose management is not always good leaders, are they? What's your thoughts on leadership?
Absolutely. Well, we have our seven sector model. To sort of explain it as an overview, how it works, leadership and management is like the head, if you like. We have finance as the body, where products and services go in, convert into food, convert into energy, the same as products and services convert into cash in your business. Then we have the legs of operations and HR that carry the business forward, and the arms of marketing and sales that hold them all together. But if you think about it, at the top, you've got the...
That's a brilliant explanation. I love that.
Thank you. I use it quite a lot because I like to say the business needs to be a system. It's not just one piece. Now, if you think about leadership and management, leadership's the head. And in the head, you've got the left brain and the right brain. So the left brain for me is the logical side, and that's the management, the structure and process of the business. And the right side of the business is the creative side. It's the character of the person. It's the ability to connect and communicate with people. And that is the leadership side. So They on our model, we actually have a dotted line in between the sector of leadership and management, because they are in the same head, if you like. They are the same brain, but there's a left part and a right part, which is different functions.
Sure.
So for me, leadership is about leading people. It's about connecting with people. It's about having the vision, engaging people in the vision in where you want to go. It's that leadership mindset we talk about. You know, so you set yourself the right vision. You have the, you have people that you want to encourage and get them to buy into the vision of where you want to go, and encourage them and inspire them to want to be part of what we do. So for me, leadership's about emotional intelligence a lot.
Do you think leadership has to be in people, or you can teach and instill leadership?
I'm glad you asked that question, because that's why I just brought up emotional intelligence. So we know now that great leaders have great emotional intelligence. And the great thing that's different about emotional intelligence to IQ, so EQ, we call it emotional intelligence. IQ is the, you know, the cognitive horsepower you've got for your intelligent quotient. Well, what you've got is what you've got when you get to about 18. That's pretty much what you've got with your intelligence quotient, your cognitive horsepower, your calculating ability. Whereas your emotional intelligence is like part of the body, and it's plastic. It's able to develop and grow, and a bit like taking your muscles down. It's a muscle. You can take it down the gym and you can develop it. So emotional intelligence, some people naturally have more of it than other people. You'll see those people about. I often talk about the gap between stimulus and response is where leadership grows. So when something happens and how you choose to react to it, that's what it's all about. So I talk about often having either an angel or a demon in your head, and it's which one do you choose to listen to? You're either spiraling up with your thoughts. So we talk about having a great attitude. So you're gracious, enthusiastic, so having a great attitude, whereas the bad attitude is blaming people, you know, is where they antagonistic and defensive about the way they act. So they're listening to the demon. So we always want to have that kind of great attitude person who's going to, you know, the sorts of people on site you see, the people who want to be helpful, the people who want to, the people who engage with you, the people who are interested, the people who want to know more, and necessarily, you don't attract those easily unless you develop a leadership attitude that reflects that, because they say birds of a feather flock together. So if you want to get those sort of people in the business and build that culture, then you need to have that great attitude, you know.
Have you, I asked this, I have views on this, but this is not about me. The leadership thing, you feel you can teach leadership. Do you come across too many people that literally you can't teach leadership because they just don't get it?
People have to want this. With coaching, it's the same. They have to want to make the change. If they're not interested, you can go to the gym and you could work out if you wanted to, and it would develop the muscle. If they don't want to go to the gym and they don't want to work out, they're not going to develop the muscle.
Interesting.
So it depends. So that emotional intelligence muscle is really good. I mean, Dr. Martin Newman, he's one of the cleverest people I know. He's got 3 PhDs. He's the guy who developed the system for emotional intelligence, the one that we use around the 360. So you can actually, not only do you get your feedback from yourself as if what you see in the mirror, but you get it from around you as well, like the above you, you know, below you, beside you, other people. Mm-hmm. And so you get a real reflection. And that's what we talk about, developing this emotional intelligence. Because if you can develop your emotional intelligence, your leadership, you can engage and connect with people better and take them on the journey that you want to go. Because ultimately, if you want to be a great leader, you need to have followers. And if you don't spend time building followers, they aren't going to, if they don't want to follow you, they're not going to be with you. They're going to leave and jump ship. So they kind of say often that you deserve the people you've got. So if you're not developing, finding the right people and spending time developing them, they're probably not caring about you either. So if you want to, you know, if you want to demonstrate how much you care about them, then they might care about your business. But if you don't care about them, they certainly won't care about your business.
Very interesting. Very interesting. I could talk to you for hours. I have to say, Emerson, it's the first time that you and I have sat down and talked to, you know, nitty gritty like this. But I run businesses, as you know, and I can hear all of those things that you're saying. But let's just touch on one of the other strands, finance. Now, we know without the right finance, of course, it's difficult to move forward with any business. The three fundamentals, as you know, as everybody should know, are, is a P&L, cash flow forecast, and a balance sheet. And I'm guessing during your business coaching, there are quite a few people that don't really understand those things. Do you find that?
You'd be absolutely right there. Yeah. A lot of people say, well, I just see the accountant once a year. And it's almost a complete and utter does them a disservice. And to be fair, the accountants are doing them a disservice by only seeing them once a year. I see my accountant every month because I think the numbers are key to success in business. You've got to understand the numbers.
And know exactly where you are at any given time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, the guys go out and they test circuits. They know what the numbers are. That's important to them. Well, the numbers that run the business are really important as well. I think Warren Buffett quotes as well as saying that, you know, you need to be able to speak the language of business, and the language of business is numbers, because your business can't speak to you. It can't tell you what's not wrong or not working. You've got to kind of interpret the information. And as you said, there's those three key areas that I would interpret from. The first is the P&L, and that's a history lesson. That's looking back over the history. Now, in my book, I've done an explainer on it, because so many people try and confuse people with how it works in terms of the P&L. But what I do is I say, look, at the top, just think of that as your income. What's coming in? It's like a funnel. Everything's going through. So there is the top. They call it sales. But you'll find some people will also rename that turnover, or they might rename that revenue, or they might call it income. They might give it different names and try to confuse you when they're explaining that, look, the revenue's down, so we need to work on the turnover to make sure we got the right income. And they're all talking about the same line at the top line.
It's got to be called income, though, hasn't it? Because that's all-encompassing. That's what it is.
It's your income statement. Sometimes they call it that. But it's like, what's coming in? So you need to understand what's coming into business. Then you've got to understand your cost of sales. You've got to understand what does you have to spend on site. I say, look, everything you spend on site, that's your cost of sales. That means direct labor and direct parts. A lot of people don't get the labor right. They just put the wages in the fixed cost, but it's not. It's any of those engineering costs, engineering labor, subcontractors maybe, or direct employees, they go in there. The parts that, you know, the costs that you have for equipment hire, all that kind of stuff goes in the cost of sale. So the income less the cost of sale gives you gross profit. Now, all people think that's their profit. No, that's the big profit that they don't get to keep.
I wish it were.
If only, yeah. So, you know, if they're running around 40% gross profit, they've got a nice, good business, that's great. But actually, what they've got to then consider is the fixed costs. And the fixed cost is everything. If you take your business and you shake it out, everything that falls out of your business, you know, your insurances, your fleet, your utilities, your rent, your rates,
salaries,
the salaries for the non-direct labor people. So the admin people, the management people, project managers, you know, the pre-construction guys, any of that stuff, all of that. That goes in there, and then you take that away from the gross profit, and that gives you your net profit. So that gives you the clue that the net is what is left over. And the net profit isn't even where it stops, because the net profit, they often call it EBIT or EBITDA, and that's all about the earnings before interest and tax, because then you have to pay your tax off of that. Now, one of the things I found, a lot of people have it set up incorrectly. If they're taking dividends, They don't necessarily show that cost because dividends comes off the bottom. It's ghosted off the bottom. So if they were actually having dividends and they're taking that, you should show it in your fixed cost just for your management accounts, not obviously for the final end of year accounts for tax purposes, but just so you've got an idea. Are you really making that money? Does it cover the cost of you in the business? Otherwise, as the owner of the business, if you're out there doing work all the time and you're finishing off jobs and doing work on site and you're not allocating your time to it, those costs have just been ghosted across the business.
I'm old school. I mean, I love all this stuff because I love business. It's kind of my hobby as well as everything else. But do you, I'm assuming you advocate, I'm being an old school publisher, I was taught many, many years ago to have monthly management accounts so that you know, don't produce by the accountant. So you know exactly where you are at any given time and you can forecast any problems arising. I guess you advocate management, monthly management accounts, do you?
Absolutely. So as I said, I see my accountant every month. I run a, you know, we run a monthly P&L so you can see what's happening. You can check your year to date. You can check the last quarter. You can check where you're at with previous quarters and previous years. And you can just see how your, how things are working. It's that you're looking for the trend analysis, really. So if you can, I'd always try and get that data that's in a table turned into some kind of graph and chart as well. So it's just easier to see. So our, you know, our finance section, we call it asset. We go through the five levels. So each one of our sectors has got five levels and the A stands for accounts, having a set of accounts. The S stands for statements. So that's then understanding your statement or as some people call it, the balance sheet or the balance statement. You know, you need to know what is owed to you and what do you owe out, so you can start seeing you know, have I actually, am I building up equity in my business? Am I getting a positive balance sheet? It's a bit like people own a house, they get equity in their house, they know what that is. It's the same in your business. You're building the assets up. The assets could be kit and stuff that you own, or it could be cash in the bank. And the P&L really is a breakdown, because on that line on the balance sheet that says profit, The P&L is just the explainer. It's just the method statement, if you like, to show you how you got to that net profit at the bottom.
But as the word P&L says, or two words, it's profit and loss. That you're either making a profit or you're making a loss. If you so,
it's the game of business. That's what we talk about. So, you know, the game of business is to make profit. Some people forget that. They think it's to install stuff. I'm like, well, it is to install stuff, but at a profit. Because if you don't do it at profitable, then you're going to be going out of business. So you're not actually going to be supporting yourself.
Yeah, and many, many companies that I've seen over the years are clueless in this area, but of course they consider turnover to be king, but of course it isn't. It's down to it's down to your gross profit and net profit, isn't it? But still get people thinking, oh, I've got a great turnover. Great, but what are your overheads?
Yeah, exactly. It's comparing the wrong thing. You know, turnover is great to see, but really, as you say, profit is where it's at. In fact, cash is reality, don't they say? So it's actually ended up with the cash is the reality of where you really are at, because you can have a profitable business on a P&L, but just because you raise an invoice doesn't mean somebody's going to pay it. And so therefore, what's really important is the cash flow. Where is the money? So if the P&L is looking to the history lesson and looking back over the information, the balance sheet is the snapshot of where are we at today, then we also really encourage people to look at the cash flow forecast. And what you'll find is most interesting, 96% of businesses fail because of cash flow, and probably about only 4% of businesses have a cash flow forecast. So it's actually, if they had a cash flow forecast, you're looking at the front windscreen. I often say the front windscreen of the vehicle is your cash flow forecast, so you can see what's coming at you. The P&L is only the rear view mirror. You only need to look up at the rear view mirror occasionally to see what's going on. It's helpful if you're reversing, but it's, you know, see what's happening behind. What you really need to be looking at is the cash flow forecast. Now, the P&L you have to do for the government. That's what you're doing it for. But the cash flow forecast you need to do for yourself. And most accountants, when I speak to them, say, oh yeah, we could do that, no problem. But do they do that for their clients? Often not the case. So if you haven't got one off your accountant, I would chase them to help you get a cash flow forecast. And then we break it down into a basic cash flow forecast, which is just looking at, well, what did I invoice last month? It's probably what I'm going to get cash next month. But that's a very basic 1 month ahead looking cash flow forecast. But really, I encourage month two and month three. Month two is from the work in progress. That's all the work you know you're doing right now, but you haven't yet invoiced. And that rings another thing, which is get your invoicing done. For Christ's sake, please hurry up and get your invoicing done. But I don't know why some people leave it and then don't do it and then wonder why they got a cash flow crisis. But please get your invoicing done weekly at least and get it done.
Yeah. But this is the business of business, isn't it? Mm. And I mean, clearly I'm going to state the obvious now, but I know lots of contractors out there. They're great contractors. They're great at what they do, but they don't understand the business of business, and they can do a great job and they can fail from the cash flow point of view. I always say cash is king. But I know quite a few companies like you that have been owed fortunes of money, but because their cash flow has been on the floor, they've ended up losing their company.
Yes, because they might have invoiced the money, but they haven't received it. You know, I've had that where I've had taken clients on and we've had to chase that money in hard. They didn't realise it was a problem. There was a 100K cash gap or something where they were just being really lackadaisical about the amount of money in it. So we talk about closing the cash gap and making sure we bring the money in as quick as we can, being really efficient
which is the credit control. Credit control thing. Getting absolutely on
top of that. So the cash flow forecast is looking at, and month two is obviously looking at the work in progress. Month three, you can start doing if you get a little bit more sophisticated and you actually have something called a sales pipeline. So that means the opportunities that are coming up, but you don't put everything from the sales pipeline in the cash flow. You only put in maybe your top 20% of your people who've reached 80% chance of winning it, you know. So yes, they're the people you're likely to get in. They're the ones you think, right, these are the ones that are coming in. And so therefore you can start adding them and go, well, I can forecast that next month I should be picking up this client, and therefore the month after we should start invoicing, so I can start seeing 3 months ahead. And you're looking for what's coming in and then what's going out. And in the same way as a P&L looks at what's coming in and what's going out, but the difference is the P&L looks backwards over the previous months, whereas the cash flow needs to look forwards. And it's hugely important. So we do that and make sure that people are understanding the importance of that business. And then they start to understand the importance of cash, you know, and bringing in the cash and actually chasing it and credit control and getting on top of the money. It's a much happier place to be when you can pay your wages and you can buy the products and services that you need without having to concern yourselves about juggling from pulling from Peter to pay Paul, you know?
It never ceases to amaze me as well that, I mean, we've obviously got a good credit control system, but people invoice, the invoices that people receive, if they're not chased, they don't pay them.
Well, exactly. The squeaky wheel gets oiled, as I say. You know, if you and actually, one of the things I talk about is the payment cycle. If you just phone a client and say, just want to check what payment cycle we're on, you're not saying you're not going to pay me. You're just saying, when are you going to pay me? Yes. And the assumption is, of course, you're going to pay me. I just want to know what payment cycle I'm on so that you can understand when you're going to get your money. And you can say, I just want to update our cash flow forecast. Just want to check what payment cycle we're on. And that way, you know, they've got the invoice, because what a lot of people do is they end up getting the project manager gets the invoice. He forgets to send it on to finance. And well, they don't pay what they haven't got. So one of the oldest tricks in the book is they say they didn't receive the invoice. Well, better make sure and check that they've got the invoice then, haven't you, first? And then, and you can do that by checking where you are in the payment cycle. So,
but also the statement is an important thing, isn't it? You know, get statements out mid-month, perhaps, and then people put their head above the parapet and say, oh, well, I haven't got that invoice, but it's on the statement. Mm. So you kind of unearth those kind of things.
Absolutely. So it's, you know, this whole finance piece, I mean, so many businesses, they get into it because they know the tools. That's the thing that they did. And somebody in the office, whoever they worked for before, used to worry about this finance bit, and they kind of have to learn it on the way. And there's some great books on it. Profit First for Contractors, I recommend quite a lot to learn how to do the finance.
Okay.
And it helps you to understand margins and markup, because there's a big difference in that. Otherwise they're giving away 5-7% without even thinking about it. You know, it makes them understand that they need to cover their fixed costs and things like that, and start adding contribution to their quotes, so they're covering the back office and all the other stuff. I mean, I remember having a client once, and he said, "Oh, I always had 15% to my quotes." And I went, "Why is that?" He said, "Well, my dad used to run the business and he did it." I went, "Okay, brilliant. What are you doing there? Is you're trying to cover your fixed costs?" He went, "Oh, right, brilliant." I said, "Should we just go and see what your fixed costs are?" Well, unfortunately for him, the company was bigger when his dad had it. It shrunk a little bit when he got it. He he was actually at fixed costs at 22%. So, he wasn't even adding enough to cover it. So he was probably only, he was about 7% shy on actually making any, off the profit line. And what most people don't realize, if you're running a net profit of 10 or 15%, you know, you only need to be a few points the wrong way and you're not making money. And there's so many business owners out there, I find, that aren't making money on jobs.
Yeah. Suddenly it's the L in P&L.
Exactly. It is.
Electrical Contracting News is the leading title for the electrical contracting industry. Packed monthly with news, views, product releases, case studies, and much more, it's a must read for any electrical contractor looking to stay informed, source new business, and increase their profits. If you prefer to get your news online, get along to electricalcontractingnews.com, which is updated daily. ECN is the last word in electrical contracting. Don't miss out. Stay up to date with ECN in print and online.
Just moving on, another sector, if I can call that. Of course, you talk about operations and HR. I know these things aren't necessarily linked, but how do you coach in those areas, operations and HR? HR, well, obviously, if you're running staff, HR is very important, but you link those two things, operations and HR, do you?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, as we explain about in the book, the reason I do that is they're the two legs of the business that carry the business forward. So where finance was the body and it was producing and converting everything that you made into cash and obviously dealing with a little bit of crap as well, which they have to do, then legs of operations HR carry the business forward. So the better the systems are, the more consistent the systems are, the more efficient the systems are, the better that side of the business runs. So you get great quality of workmanship and great quality of work from having great systems. And then to actually do the work, you need the people to do it. Because as of yet, there's no AIs going out and installing works, right? So you need the people. So the people need to be, you know, and recruited, and people are people and they aren't machines. So they do have relationships. They do have the need to feel wanted, to feel a sense of reward and recognition and pat on the back. They do need to be dealt. And we took it back to that leadership one we said earlier. The leadership was all about making sure you had that connection with the people. On the management side, that was about the logic of having the right systems. So, and having the right plan to follow. So that's what we say on the management. So in operations, it's really about kind of diving deeper into the structure of the systems. Now, we work quite closely with a number of people to make sure the systems are working well. I always say you need to basically have a sausage machine that you're running the business on, so that the parts and the, you know, so that the ingredients go in and then the labor happens and then out come great quality sausages out the end if you're putting in great quality ingredients. So you need to make sure that we're doing the right stuff and putting them in and putting it through a good quality sausage machine itself. So we need to map out how that works. So we talk about using our works process, our five-letter word works, and the first W stands for workflows. So you've got to map out your workflows, know what's happening, know what the stages are. You're looking for the bottlenecks. There's a great book out there called The Goal, and that's all about managing the constraints out of your business. Where are the constraints? And so I use that sort of analogy to how do we make it work better? How do we map it out? And we talk about flexing the system. So flowchart, list, engage and X factors. How do we make sure we've done that? All of this details in the book, in the Bright Business Transformation for Contractors book in more detail. But, you know, trying to get it across, you need to get the operations working smoothly. If you think about some of the best operators in the world, I mean, you take McDonald's as an example. People are like, well, McDonald's, that's not great at that. But I'm telling you what, the fact that they've got 29,000 outlets or whatever it is around the world, and they're able to deliver a Big Mac in exactly the same way, no matter where you go, that is an amazing systemized approach. So it's about having them systems and them standard operating procedures, but also having the training to develop and to do those systems correctly. And having the standard operating procedures, not just being written, but being photographs or videos and all that kind of stuff. That's what I do, because we're now taking on more coaches to help. I've video recorded lots of the work that I do, the strategy sessions, the coaching sessions, the sales calls, all that stuff, so that they can watch and learn in their own time over and over again. So you get consistency. Sure. So operations is all about having that workflow mapped out. And then the for works, then the O for works is about getting things optimized. So once you've mapped it all out, then you look at, well, how can we improve it? So we normally look for technology improvements. I say the businesses that lead with the best technology usually win. If you look at it, it's about getting the right systems in. I work quite closely as a partner with Simpro, and they're one of the software companies that we work with. I've got numerous, I mean, we must have over 60 or 70 contractors at the minute that work with us, who have working with Simpro now over the last 4 or 5 years, I think. So I know that works, but whether it's that or one of the other ones out there, there's a few different ones. You know, you need to have a system that works. You know, the smaller ones, some of them are on like Tradify or something, or maybe it's on a Big Change or whatever. But ultimately, it's having a structured system that makes that business work.
Totally agree. Let me, something that's a conversation I had early on, actually. I'm interested in how you feel about managing people. I mean, you talk about operations and HR, yes, but within that, of course, is managing people. I always say that you're either a born leader or you're not, but you can be taught how to manage people. Mm. I quoted something when I, many years ago, when I was given my first managerial job, I didn't know how to manage people. And I had a particularly awkward guy that was probably twice my age, and trying to manage him was like pulling teeth. Do you talk to people in your day-to-day teachings in terms of managing people?
Absolutely. So management, as I said, you know, we have leadership and we have management. So management is a key part of it. And management is about sort of, like you say, managing people and systems. So management for me is more about directive, asking people to do specific things. That's what management is. Whereas leadership is inspiring, encouraging them to do the right thing. So from a management perspective or supervisory and things like that, first you have to have those structured systems that we talked about on operations so that people know what they've got to do. And then management is about making people doing it in a timely and in the right way. So often it's not about blaming a person, it's about blaming the system if something isn't working. Because otherwise you just put people's backs up. So often we look at, okay, what's wrong with the system here? How come we're getting this result? What's wrong? Instead of pointing fingers and telling people they're doing things wrong. So the old school management was, you know, that command and control. It worked really well in the military. That's what they needed. You just told to walk over there and get shot and you just did it. You know, that's how they kind of, that's what they did. You know, I've just watched the Napoleon video. He goes, right, I'll load you over there. And then they just all got shot and that was it. But that's command and control.
Good management.
Yeah. Management is command and control. Whereas, you know, good leadership is about encouraging the best performance out of the person who's doing that particular thing. So when we talked about operations, about operational systems and getting the right people in play, then we talked about HR. HR is about how do you get the team engaged? And very much the most important thing for me in this is around having an HR framework so people know where they fit, what the expectations are, having appraisals so they're getting feedback so people know they're doing a good job, and then having that reward and recognition on the performance side so that people get a feeling that they're doing something right. People want to do a good job most of the time. I think people want to do a good job, but you know, it's about catching people doing things right and engaging with them and telling them they're doing a great thing. And then the recruitment is all about getting the right people in to the roles, in the specific roles. So if you're talking about management, then that's about putting the right people in the roles in the specific areas. So I often run a team day and I might be like, show me the leaders in the room. And a couple of people kind of sheepishly put their hand up or whatever. And I said, no, all of you, I want you to raise your hands because all of you are leaders. Leaders to me are people who have the potential, right, to actually to engage other people and to influence other people in the room. But management is that structure, or they've got to have a certain level of delegation of authority. They've got to have a certain level of sign off, or, you know, whatever it happens to be. So when we're engaging on the people side, it's about getting the culture right. It's so much. There's a brilliant book called Delivering Happiness by a guy called Tony Hsieh, and he took his business from zero and sold it 10 years later for $1.2 billion to Amazon. And he was just selling shoes online. And he said the moment he got culture right and got all the people, you know, engaged properly in the business, that's when he took off. That's when he didn't put in the corporate values to start with, because he thought it was too corporate, cheesy thing to do.
Actually,
I do it often. My guys, we work with them. I get them to come up with a culture word that represents them. So one of my clients, IM Electrical, he's come up with improve, Ian Morris did, right? So his was improve. Whereas some people, like maybe ProWired, they used ProWired as the word that specifically represents their culture. So when people are there, I mean, my brighter culture, mine's called brighter. So mine stands for like brightness of future, relationships first, innovation, growth mindset, honesty, team player, emotional intelligence and resilience. So when we're looking for new coaches, which we are now, I'm now officially looking for more coaches because we're getting so busy. I'm going to look for people that fit that kind of culture to be the right sort of people that we want to bring in. So you kind of use the culture to get the right people into the business, and you put the rest of the team through this culture filter, because some of them, unfortunately, when we join, we kind of shake the tree and normally about 10% fall off. But then you actually replace them with people who then fit the culture, and you'll be amazed at the opportunity cost you had having somebody in there who was poorly performing.
I get that. Very, very interesting.
I often say to people, and I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say this on the podcast, but you're better off having a hole in the business than an a-hole. And that, you know, you can have very highly skilled a-holes, but unfortunately they don't engage with the team. They don't support each other. They're not a team player. And when that happens, it causes, you know, problems in the ranks. People don't work together well. And what you want is to have a really great place that people want to be part of, a great team. And we do a lot of work on culture development. I mean, I've had some great teams do some really good stuff. You know, Danny does all that stuff as well. He does brilliantly at, and we've done some work at Penton Electrical. He just took a load of his guys all the way to Tenerife, I think it was. They all went, the whole team went for a weekend for their Christmas do. So I think he worked out
wonderful.
He could do that almost for the cost of doing the Christmas do. But you've got to fly away and do this great engaged, you know, and it engages everybody together. You can do so much through social engagement, and it bonds that team, you know, even if it's pizza and a bowling night or something. You know, I really recommend getting regular engagement with people and doing stuff.
Totally agree. That's my philosophy entirely. Let me move on to a couple of subjects that are, again, using that phrase, very dear to my heart. And I'm going to enjoy this conversation. You mentioned marketing and sales. Well, you mentioned marketing and sales in one sentence. Mm-hmm. I'm not too sure whether they should be in the one sentence, but let me just say why. I've seen marketing is a science. Marketing is marketing, and you should be taught to market. And I've seen so many people over the years whereby they're great salespeople. They hit their targets every month. They're great salespeople. And then the company says, how do we promote this guy? This guy's doing a great job for us. He's pulling in X amount, busting his targets. Oh, I know what we'll do. We'll give him marketing. So then we call the guy sales and marketing. But then in reality, said guy or gal knows nothing about marketing, but they're given the marketing role. That, to me, is a complete, well, if I may say, a complete lack of understanding from the top that what marketing can do for them. Your thoughts?
As I say, the difference is they are the separate arms of the person. So I would treat marketing and sales as separate sectors that we would then develop separately what you're doing. Now, whether the responsibility is for both, that might be, but then you'd find the salesperson probably wouldn't have the understanding of the marketing. But as long as they have a marketing team, they might be able to manage them. But I would recommend having a deeper dive into marketing separately than sales.
But you must know. I mean, you're clearly a very good salesman, but you must know quite a few companies that have a sales and marketing manager, and they do combine the two, don't they?
They do, because I think they're trying to save money, probably. But what I recommend, you see, is that the way I see it is, if you play golf, marketing is putting the ball on the tee.
Right. Okay.
But sales is.
I love your analogies. Yeah. They're great.
But sales is hitting the ball. Yeah. You need to do both. So you've got to tee up the ball. So marketing is finding the leads. So for me, marketing is all about ROI, return on investment. It's all about finding the leads. And if you do the marketing right, the sales is kind of, the world has changed. You can do a lot more in marketing up front, building all the relationships, building all the kind of the trust in the brand, in the people, and do a lot more work up front in marketing and communicating your message to the market that you're after. So marketing for me is about speaking to the right people. You're looking to speak to the right people, give them the right message.
In terms of your audience.
Yeah, that brings up the audience, the correct audience, that brings up the fear, frustration, desire in them. So you can, you can get them to take a step. And the step forward is, as soon as they're, the ball's in the ground, as soon as they've recognized and put their hand up and gone, okay, I'm now interested in what you've done, then you hand it over to sales. And sales' job is to take them by the hand and lead them to the promised land and get them to sign up and become a client. And that then all becomes around the relationship, the interaction between them. The proposal clearly has to meet the needs of the person, whoever they are. But for us on the marketing side, we use our marketing model. We call it market message media. So you've got to be really specific about the market you're going for. Get really clear. So you don't just go, I do electrical people, anyone to do with electrical. That's what we sell. Anyone who uses electrics. Well, that's not going to be niche enough. Whereas if you went, look, we specifically work in NHS, or we specifically work in industrial electrical, or we're doing it in solar, or we've got a specific area that we do. So then you can get recognised for that skill. Because as I always say, would you rather have a GP work on you if you had brain trauma, or would you rather have a brain surgeon work on you? And you probably want to have a brain surgeon. And that's one of the reasons most of our clients say that, to say, they want to work with us because we work with electrical guys. We've got loads, I think we have a live event coming up, and we'll probably have about 50 or 60 of them turn up to our next live event. And we run them every 4 months. And that's because we know what works, what doesn't. We know what makes them tick. And, they have a choice of 100 coaches out there, 1,000 coaches, but they work with us because they know we know. I'm in the ECA. I'm a commercial associate member of the ECA. Most business coaches wouldn't even know what the ECA is, let alone being part of it. Do you know what I mean?
So, well, you are a specialist, aren't you? And that's what's good about you. You specialise. I mean, the electrical industry and the figures in the public domain is said to be worth something like 20.5 billion in the UK. You've got a big market to go for. But you're a specialist and you're specialising in that market. That's what I find encouraging.
Yeah, and that's what I'm trying to tell the guys to do. Have your specialist areas. It doesn't mean you only have to have one area, but you might have, like, one of my bigger clients, he's like 10 million turnover and he does a lot of work within the MOD. So that's one of their major sectors. But they also do NHS. So they've got another sector, and they also do some commercial works as well. So they've got like sort of three different areas. So your marketing can lead to those different areas. But I always say, look, if a different niche that you're going after, say you had French, Spanish and German, if you speak French to the French, Spanish to the Spanish and German to the German, you have a much better result than if you just shout English at all of them and hope somebody listens. And yet most people's marketing is that kind of generalized approach. Whereas if you become a specialist, which is you've asked me to speak here today, right? Because I'm a specialist in working with these contractors. So we were talking about marketing, and we use our leads process for generating a lead generation plan. And one of the things that we've developed is our own CRM, because what I found is, we called it the Bright Marketing Machine. There was just not I looked at lots of different systems out there, and I've always struggled to get the clients to find one that works. So in the end, we got our own one. I've partnered with a company in America. We've built all the component parts. So it will do lead generation through email marketing. It will do it through text message marketing. It will do it through voice message marketing even. It allows you to drop everything into a sales funnel. So this means that then the salespeople can be looking at what leads have you got and then moving them on and nurturing them down the funnel.
Music to my ears. That's absolutely spot on and so valuable to have in a company.
And then you've got all, what they say, you know, the money's in the list. So the value of your business is based on all of those people that are in there. You know, that, you know, if you want to add more value to your company, more equity to it, you need to have that CRM for your company with all of the customers in, all the potential customers as well. And that's where you can start driving that sales pipeline from as well. So you can start like driving the sales pipeline. Because what most people do is they'll do a quote and then they'll send it out and then forget about it. And I mean, yes, it's absolutely, completely crazy. They spent all that time, you know, all that money on their marketing, on their website, all their adverts, all the stuff they're doing. Then they get the lead, they go to the site, they go and do the quote, and then they just like email it out and forget about it instead of actually chasing it up, following up. So sales to me is pursuing the lead and converting it into a client.
A lot of that should be common sense, I would think.
Well, 80% of what I do is common sense. It's just not that common sense these days, unfortunately. sense is not that common, you know. So a lot of what we do is common sense. But, you know, it's common sense to go to the gym three times a week, eat healthily, you know, cut sugar out and reduce the amount of alcohol you drink, probably. And all that kind of stuff we all know. But does everybody do it? Just because you know it doesn't mean it gets done. Whereas I like to say we're like personal trainers for your business, but instead of making your body thinner, we make your wallet fatter.
you should have in your book, and I don't think you do. I can't remember. I've got the book there, actually. You should have all your analogies, a list of your analogies in the back there, like a table list. That would be great. I love your analogies.
I spend my life doing analogies because I have to try and explain things to people. And I find that stories and analogies are the best way to explain it. It's like this because then they understand, or here's an example. And I found if you use examples to explain stuff to people, they much more take it on than if you just tell them directly to do something.
Examples that they completely, totally understand. Yeah, I get it.
I try to break it down to simple things. I mean, ultimately, you know, building a business is simple. It's just not easy. It's putting the right bricks in place, but doing it consistently and over again and again. And once you put enough bricks in place, you have a wall. When you put the walls together, you have a building. You put the roof on, now it's secure. You put the windows in, and that's how it works, you know. And we have to do that. I'm not one of these overnight success things. We can just transform your business, you know. It doesn't happen like that. For me, it's like hard work and graft. If you wanted to join the gym and transform your body, you would have to put work in. And I'm the same with our clients. This is not going to be an easy journey. It's going to be a tough journey, but the results are going to be brilliant and what you need and what you are looking for. And so you have to put in the work to get the result. You know, it doesn't come by easy.
I love it. Well, on that note, That's all great, Emerson. We've covered a hell of a lot, which I find very, very interesting, really do. And from my point of view, if you're running a business, go and see this man because, you know, he turns business around. You wanted to say a few words about your book, Emerson. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, obviously today we've covered stuff at quite a high level, but, you know, we delve much deeper into it in the book. And I'm more than happy to give a free copy of the audio for the book away to your listeners there, David. And so we're going to put the notes on for doing that, or they can go onto my website, brightbusinessadvice.com. And if they go on to the contact us page and just put in there requesting a copy of the audiobook, we'll send you a copy of that. But, you know, or you can go on Amazon because it is an Amazon bestseller. Go and buy one. That would be nice. Thank you very much.
Is it? Really good.
Yeah.
Good.
We managed to get to Amazon bestseller status. Wow. And also you can listen to the audiobook through Audible. If you use Audible, you can buy it on Audible as one of your credits. But I'm happy to give away some free ones to your readers because I think, you know, if they go and register and they want to learn and they want to develop, we want to work with people that want to learn and develop and educate themselves. And I'm also more than happy to do a free 30-minute business review with those people who've qualified. In other words, they've been to one of our webinars and workshops. I mean, we're running a weekly workshop called Contractor Success Secrets, and we're breaking down into, you know, a 45 minute chunk on each one of those sections. So we're giving a lot more detail and explaining how it works. So if anybody wants to go on our main website, brightbusinessadvice.com, you'll see there's a button to come to our main webinar, and off the back of that, you know you'll listen to our content, you'll get education, and you'll know how to help run your business. My key aspect is not just helping businesses get better, but actually the business owners. I want to free up your time so you can spend more time with your family and enjoy what you do. That's what it's about. It's about actually having the resources to be able to enjoy the free time. One of my clients said, oh, I went on holiday and I left my laptop at home for the first time ever. And he was away for 2 weeks and it was amazing, you know, or, you know, I want to be able to free up their time so they can be there for their kids' sports days, or they can be there, you know, in the evening and see their families. Cause I see these guys working really long hours and, you know, and they're not always in the room when they're in the room, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
They're constantly thinking about other things, other stuff has got, the phone is always out. They're always on email. They're always doing messaging.
Some of these people need their laptops and phones surgically removed, I think, don't they?
Absolutely.
My staff tell me I'm a little bit like that.
Well, we actually have some digital sunsets that we do at home, and absolutely never a phone at the dinner table either. So, you know, there's certain things you do. But one of the things I wanted to say is we're not just doing the business skills, although we do the skills of business, but we also do the personal skills. So in leadership, for me, that's about developing the person. And what I found is that if we do the vertical development of the person as well as the horizontal development of the business, you get this amazing increase in the business and how it works. You know, we've taken businesses from 2.7 to over 8 million turnover. You know, RJC Mechanical, one of my guys, he's gone from like 6 to nearly 10 million now. He's absolutely flying. You know, people like Danny, and who've won awards and Pro Wired, and he's done so good, and he was up for your awards. Or there's so many businesses like that out there. You know, Penton Group they're just amazing. Hudson's, you know, Electrical. There's just all these guys that are doing such great things, developing their teams and getting the life they want. I'm so proud of what they do. And, you know, I just want to help more people get the same results for themselves.
It's commendable.
You know, we're expanding now to offer it not only just electrical, but we're now offering it into the plumbing and heating space as well, the HVAC space. And then I've just taken on a new coach who's going to be helping in the contractor space. He's been in it for 30 years. He's been a QS. He's a RICS qualified guy. So we can help develop all the people on the building and contracting services side a lot more as well. So the idea is, you know, we want to help these businesses, and these businesses, you don't often get this. They go to college, they learn a skill. Nobody teaches them how to run a business. And if we can help them do that, that's what we want to do at Bright. We're all about this change and helping them achieve their goals.
Exactly right. So if you want a free copy of Emerson's book, it's brightbusinessadvice.com. Get yourself along to there, and I'd recommend reading the book. You've heard the man talk today, and clearly it's very impressive. So that's about it for this recording. We've obviously covered a hell of a lot, which leaves me to say thank you to Emerson Patton from Bright Business Advice.
Thank you very much as well, David. I really appreciate being asked to come on here and share what we do. I've been on numerous podcasts trying to do the same thing. You know, the more we can put the word out there, the more we can educate and help these guys, the better their lives will be, the better their business will be, the better the economy will be. And, you know, most of them just don't know what they don't know. And we have to help them, educate them. And, you know, with what you do with your magazine and the awards and everything that you're doing, you know, it's a great thing to help them and learn as well.
Well, we're there. I mean, like you, we're there to support the industry, you know, in whatever way we can. I think podcasts like this really do help the industry because, like I say, to me, what's dear to my heart is the business of running a business. And that's what you're all about. And turning these companies around, I think, is absolutely commendable. So remember, if you want to be included in Electrical Contracting News, ECN, do contact Carly Weller, the group editor, or Kelly Byne, the group advertisement manager. We're aiming to produce these podcasts on a monthly basis, So if you want to get involved in the podcasts again, contact Carly or Kelly. So keep your eye open for and social media to hear this recording in the coming days. Have a great day and goodbye.
Thanks for listening to the ECN podcast. Please subscribe to this podcast in your chosen podcast app so you never miss an episode. Stay up to date with ECN in print and online. Visit electricalcontractingnews.com.